As You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, what was the third one?
I didn't even know what they were saying at the time. It was I don't remember.
I smoke a lot of pot. I don't remember what these phrases are.
Time isn't real, and yet we live our lives by it, or something.
What time is it? I don't know. Yeah. We are here to talk about one battle after another.
Yes.
The new Paul Thomas Anderson movie starring Leonardo DiCaprio. It's gone through about 10 different titles, I feel like. Because it's based on the book Vineland, I guess loosely based on this, which is a Thomas Pynchon novel. I have not read it. And then it was called, like,
PTA has done a book.
Yes, he did Inherent Vice, which I also haven't seen. That's one of the PTA movies I opted out of. Yeah. And then it was called, like, The Battle of Belkin Cross, I think, which I actually think is a better title than this. I think One Battle After Another is a bad title.
The Battle of Belkin Cross is more of a word salad to me than One Battle After Another.
Yeah, but then you could just call it, like, Balkan Cross or whatever. You know, it's like one battle. It's hard to shorten.
You're just tired of the four words.
Recommending
it. You're like, I saw this good movie, just give me a minute. I have to really catch my breath before I tell you the title.
I had this idea, and I thought this was genius. And I've been pitching it to people who seem, like, less thrilled about it than I do.
Okay.
But I think they should have called this movie The French 75.
No.
You don't think so?
No, because that's... The entire second half of the film is people not involved in the French 75. And in fact, the French 75 fails. And that's what inspires the rest of the film, is sort of this, like, failed, you know, uprising. But also, like, how do you pass this baton to the next generation?
But don't you feel like the French 75 is just, like, a good movie title? Like, if you saw that on a poster, like...
I think One Battle After Another. Do people not like the title? It makes sense.
No, I don't think so. I don't like the title.
You don't like it. You're like,
I don't like it. I don't like it for the same reason I don't like We Live in Time or...
But this is, like, very specific in its own way. It's One Battle After Another. It embodies exactly the sort of, like, tension and constant, like, the lack of relaxation in this film. So you have one battle after another. It's not like saying, like, feelings fall and feathers rise.
This is a bad title in that it's a title that doesn't connect with the movie. I'm saying it's a bad title in, like, I think that a good movie title has to have at least one, like, specific word in it. And I don't feel like any of these are specific words. Like, I sort of don't like Everything Everywhere All at Once as a title either, because I think that's, like, too...
Interesting.
It's too vague.
Right. So you would have called it, like, Everything Bagel.
Well, I would have called it the French 75. No, I mean, the thing with Everything Everywhere All at Once is, like, that is, again, a title that makes sense for the movie, because it is a movie that's about everything everywhere all at once.
So,
like,
it makes sense.
And obviously I love that movie, but I think that your title either needs to be, like, shorter, or it needs to be, like, more specific.
This is amazing to me. I love this. I think we should do an entire podcast just about titles.
It's like me ranking movie titles, like... Was this a good movie title? No. Was this a good movie title? Yes. I'm like, let me go to my Letterboxd and see what.
So how do you feel about the Santa Claus?
Watches.
It's a pun. It's punchy. We're
the
fans.
The Santa Claus, I think, is a great title.
Okay.
But, like.
What about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids? Is that.
That's a good title.
That's good.
That's a good title.
It's about shrinking and it's about kids, but it's also about a wife. So Honey. Right. Okay. But what about.
That has, like, a good cadence.
What about The Dark Knight?
The Dark Knight, I think, is a fine title. I think it's a good title. Again, it's specific. You know what The Dark Knight, it's like, it's a thing. You're not going to get The Dark Knight.
Chocolat.
I think also a good title. The titles I don't like are titles where too it's long. Like, it's hard for me to remember exactly what the title is because it's like a random collection.
So I think what you're saying is if it's over three words, you're not going to remember it. It seems to be about a length thing.
Yes and no, because I'm looking at this thing at my like a letterbox now, and like The Worst Person in the World, I think is a good title. It's like long, but I don't know. It's like it's more like catchy to me, or like Kiss of the Spider Woman.
I'll never see you again. What's that one? Or the Joaquin Phoenix like saves a kid mercenary movie.
Oh yes, no, yeah, exactly. It's like that's a bad title, terrible title.
I'll be seeing you in the dark or something.
Right. Yes. No. Bad title.
But I think they lend themselves to the genre of films they are, right? Like this being called like, I don't know. I don't know if we need to spend more time on it, but one battle after another. I didn't know anything going into this movie except it was Paul Thomas Anderson, and I had my reservations. Listen, Paul Thomas Anderson has a specific place in film culture that leans towards a film bro aesthetic that I just find myself repulsed by. And so I was pretty hesitant about this, and I didn't watch any trailers. I had no concept for what this film was about, but I was like, okay, one battle after another. So it's going to be like about someone having like a lot of things go wrong. And I was right. And that was a good title because it gave me just enough to know what to expect once that title card dropped. I was like, okay, yeah, this is one battle after another.
Sure. I also don't think that like I feel like this is one of those movies that's kind of like hard for trailer to sum up exactly what it is. Like even having seen the trailer, I was like, I don't know, this movie, like I don't really have a good grasp on like what is going to happen in this movie, which I think is very PTA just in general.
Yeah.
Like his movies are usually kind of long. They've got different strands of things going on in them, so they're a little bit hard to like categorize as one thing. I did find this interesting because I saw like some discourse going on Twitter about like PTA and sort of like whether this was a film bro movie, and you know, people being like I think women being like I don't really like want to go see this, it's like such a film bro movie, or like I'm shocked I liked this but then it was going to be a film bro movie. And then I saw people being like, just because a bunch of random guys like a movie doesn't mean that you as a woman like can't like this, or that or we should like not like sort of relinquish things to the like to these group of people that we don't like and just sort of be like, well, they claimed PTA, so now we can't like any of his movies. And this in turn made me think about, well, I've been I can't remember what celebrity it was who was saying like she now, like she calls herself a Christian, and she's like, I'm a Christian. My Christianity is very different than like my mega Christianity.
Is that Kristen Chenoweth?
No.
Trying to cover her. No. Well,
I want to say it was a black woman, but now I'm like, like Niecy Nash or somebody. I can't remember who. I wish I had the person. Mm-hmm. But she was saying that basically like these other people have taken...
Co-opted
the term Christian. And now it's like, are we just going to sort of let them do it? And she's like, no, I'm going to say that I'm a Christian in the same way that I have to be associated with them. I want them to have to be associated with me. Right. So that was an interesting dynamic. Anyways, all of that is to say, I feel like, yes, Paul Thomas Anderson is like film bro-y. And I know that you don't necessarily like his movies as much as I do.
Yeah.
But I do feel like he is a more nuanced and interesting filmmaker, I think, than some of the other like film bro
directors. I don't want to step into the discourse you saw because I didn't see it, so I can't speak to it, but for me, it's less that I'm like, oh, I'll never understand PTA or I'll never watch one of his movies. It's that the experiences I've had have not been enjoyable, not because it is Paul Thomas Anderson or because of the audience that gravitates towards it, but more mm-hmm. I just do not enjoy, like, I'm sorry, I can't watch the ego trip of There Will Be Blood and be like, yeah, that's a great movie. I enjoyed every minute of that. Or like Phantom Thread. Like the movies I've engaged with by him have not been my cup of tea personally. And I think some dudes will like
pizza.
Yeah, exactly. They'll like trot out there. And my God, There Will Be Blood is like the greatest film in America. I just can't take that seriously, but right. I understand art is subjective and like happy for them to die on that hill. But no, I think he does have enough of a diverse or kind of, I mean, not, he has a pretty specific tone. And I do think this movie splits from that, at least the stereotypical, you know, you have your, he's been rooted in the history, the, you know, putting himself in the past. And like, this is all, I think, one of his first contemporary stories, if I remember correctly. So anyways, yeah, it's like it Paul Thomas Anderson is a great filmmaker, I have no doubt. Like There Will Be Blood, yeah, sure, gorgeous, whatever. It's just the stories have not been ones that resonate with me or interest me at all. And so I was hesitant about like, okay, what is, like, I saw like David Elric like be like, this is the greatest film of our generation. Oh, yeah. And I was like, okay, am I, if people like, if there's this hyperbolic language around a movie and I'm already kind of like biased and the hyperbolicism is coming from men who I find kind of grating, then the eye roll is in place. Okay.
Yes.
But I still went in with a, you know, open enough mind. And was I surrounded by the broiest bros to ever bro in a movie theater? Yes, I was. I got one of the last seats in an IMAX showing. And I was like, oh, dear Lord, like, protect me. I don't feel safe here. Mm-hmm. But I watched it and I did enjoy it. I immediately left the theater and I was like, oops, unfortunately, that was a great movie. So he won. Okay.
You're like, jokes on me. Here I was with the film bros. Well, that I I feel like it should be stated that I think part of the reason why you don't like Paul Thomas Anderson is because every week you poison Rob with mushrooms to make him feel more connected. I'm like,
how
to
did
you.
He know?
And yeah. And you're like, well, yeah. Shit, how did he steal the idea from
of
this?
Caring for a man who's bedridden for the rest of my life is a personal hell. That is a nightmare scenario. Like, I'm sorry.
You're poisoning
no man
him.
Is more lovable when they are sick than when they are not. I just, that's not relatable.
Clearly, you've never seen me sick. I'm very sort of endearing.
No way. The man in that capacity. Holds it. Yeah.
Shelby, I need soup,
oh
please.
Oh, my God. I have chills.
I have diphtheria. Okay, yeah. So, but aside from that, you're poisoning me. Yeah. I am a big fan of Paul Thomas Anderson. Yes. I did hate Licorice Pizza with every fiber of my being. And I wasn't a huge Phantom Thread fan, but I do really like it. There Will Be Blood. And I love, love, love Magnolia and Boogie Nights. Mm-hmm. Which are two of his earlier movies. Shelby doesn't like Boogie Nights because she also was briefly involved in the porn industry.
It's just too personal.
But the annoying thing about this movie is that it did not play any film festivals, but it came out during the middle of all of these film festivals. So all of the press, a lot of the press screenings were when I was in Toronto, or there were press screenings that I had already signed up for in New York. So I ended up not going to a press screening of this. I saw this like,
oh my God, you had to see it with the people.
On this past Sunday at 8:30 in the morning with the normies at an IMAX screening. And
were there other people there? Were there other normies? You think?
Oh, it was packed. It was packed. You do not understand the full power of the film bro community in New York City they were like out and about. And I actually, this is another side tangent, on the way up the escalator to the theater, the sole of my shoe fell off.
Oh my God.
So I was like sort of like limping through the theater with like one shoe on, and then had to watch this entire movie without a shoe, and then had to sort of like hop to a cobbler that was around the corner and get them to resole my shoe.
That is so funny.
But a very New York experience. Yeah. But the where was I going with this? Oh, since I didn't see it early, I had to do what normal people do. I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot this feeling where you're just like seeing all of these reviews come in.
Yeah.
And you don't have a opinion to go with them. You're just right. Kind of like, oh my gosh, what is this movie?
Yeah.
And of course I saw all of the film bro, like, yeah, like the David Ehrlich, David Sims, like that crew of people. But then I was seeing people who usually don't like that kind of movie coming out being like, wait, this is great. And I was like, this movie has to be something special if it is managing to unify two very
coming
different
together.
Groups.
Yeah.
Because like when Oppenheimer came out, for example, like the film bros obviously loved Oppenheimer, but lots of people on Twitter who did not like Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
And I feel like when something like Sinners came out, there were a lot of people who loved it online, but then there was also sort of like this group of people who was like, but it's kind of a weird, like, vampire movie. Like, it's gore, you know, like people who were like, I liked it, but it was kind of odd. And I feel like with this, it was just like everybody across the board was like, this is an absolute masterpiece. And so I was sitting there like waiting to watch it. And also as a true Sinners stan, I was kind of like, okay, am I going into this sort of like with my hackles up because I don't want to like it as much as I love Sinners? And am I going to sort of like be rooting against this all year long? And also because of things like Oppenheimer or The Holdovers or even Barbie that I didn't like as much, I was a little bit worried about that, but I also adored this movie. And I think that this is now setting up a very interesting like best picture race where you have these two incredible, like, this will I'm sure be a blockbuster, it's already doing well in theaters, like kind of like once in a generation movies going for best picture. And I feel like we have not seen two like such incredible movies both positioned in this way. It is.
I don't think Sinners is going to get as much.
Coming into the fall festivals, everyone was sort of like, okay, well, Sinners is like best picture, like it's theirs to lose.
Okay.
And I don't think that, other than One Battle After Another, I don't see anything else that's like really.
I mean, The Bride is almost out. So.
Well, that's true. Yes, and Marty Supreme is coming, and God forbid we forget Avatar 3.
Yeah,
so you
yeah.
know there is there's more coming down the pike. Yeah. But
no, it was. I mean, I think someone else pointed out that like One Battle After Another also has one of these like unique letterboxed review patterns where instead of division between 3 and 5 stars or sort of a sporadic, I love it or hate it kind of vibe, it's instead just a steady uphill tick towards that 5-star. So yeah, I think it's definitely been a pleasant film, and I think it's, I mean, yeah, I have my bias, right? And so I felt like it avoided some of the pitfalls of Paul Thomas Anderson films that I find like exhausting. And while this does eke its way towards 3 hours, it feels very tight, it runs very fast, and it does not feel like a 3-hour film.
No.
At all.
I looked down at my watch thinking, oh, like, I bet we're what, an hour in? No, we were 2 hours in.
Yeah.
Like, I was stunned by how fast it goes.
No, it goes so fast. And I think it also, you know, obviously you have movies like Phantom Thread or Licorice Pizza that seem to feature women, but almost in this like really annoying, like frustrating way. Whereas this, I think, while you do have Leonardo DiCaprio as a lead and you do have a lot of attention on the creepy Sean Penn and you do have Benicio coming in, like there's still such a heartbeat of femininity. And I think the radical female, like revolutionary, is such an interesting character and like place in this movie. And so it felt like it stepped away from the usual like male ego, male hubris of a lot of movies. And so it was like, it was refreshing and interesting. And I felt like it wasn't like, I don't know, kind of exploitative in ways you could have expected from this film in other hands, or stereotypical in ways. It was all very like well crafted and done, and obviously the cast is great. And even though you're rooted with Leo DiCaprio, you also have this new up and coming actress playing the daughter and sort of the main character in the second half. And so it was like really refreshing to see all that. And then of course, on top of that, you have the sort of, prescient politics of it all, that I think he also handled really beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was so impressed by how he wove all of the stories together. And like, yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio is the main character, but he's kind of like a doofy character.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really at any point, like even at the beginning when he's with Tiana Taylor in the and the French 75 is like alive and well, he still kind of seems like a slightly bumbling, like she's the one who's kind of in charge and he's kind of like, okay, like sure, fine, I'll do whatever. And then when you get into the second half of the movie that's set in the present day, it's like the women are just running circles around him. He's like easily the most inept person by a lot. And it's so fun watching Regina Hall and Tiana Taylor and Chase Infinity, like all get these really like interesting, I think, like revolutionary hero roles. Yeah, and then, of course, we also have to mention the fact that Alana Haim is in it wearing the most ridiculous bob ever and then gets her head shot
it's
off
like
and the
crazy
bob goes
how,
flying.
How, like, shocking it was to see her. It's like, she, I don't know. I feel like maybe she should give it up. I don't think she belongs here.
I loved that the French 75 at the beginning is sort of just like a hodgepodge of like of people who are like kind of in his like Paul Thomas Anderson's like ecosystem of people. You know, it's like oh shoot, we have these roles. You're only gonna actually be in about like two scenes of the movie. Like can everybody who's like a friend of mine just come over and play one of these characters?
Reunion, yeah,
class right, reunion. Yeah. And yeah, so it's like Jungle Pussy and Alana and like a basketball player. It's such a ragtag group, but I loved every second of it. And then they all get killed, and you're like, okay, perfect.
Tough opening. Poor one out for the French 75.
I know. The French 75, the movie title.
No.
As it should have
that's
been.
That's a terrible movie title. I love you. And I know you love to be so, so wrong, but that might be your worst take ever.
That can't be my worst take ever.
That's like, just like such a strange hill to die on. You know, it's a terrible
film. Wait, okay. Another thing that I think that I... like, wasn't really thinking of when I watched it, but then afterwards I was thinking about it. Because there's the line where Leonardo DiCaprio is, like, sobbing towards the end and talking about how he doesn't know how to do his daughter's hair. Which I thought was, like, a good acting moment for Leonardo DiCaprio. But then I was like, wait a second. Paul Thomas Anderson has been married to Maya Rudolph since 2001, or they've been together for like almost 24 years.
Really?
Which one I think like legitimizes him as a person, because I love her and I'm like, okay.
You're like, if she can put up with him, then he must not be the worst.
Yeah, I'm like, he must be like she's so funny, and I feel like she's so smart in the stuff that she does.
I just have to verify this. Comedy. This is the craziest pairing I've ever.
No. They have four kids. And so then I was thinking about this movie as like a movie made by a like white man who's like raising black daughters in America. And I feel like that gives it like an extra sort of layer of poignancy that I really wasn't thinking about when I was watching it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because it's like, wow, obviously this isn't quite like, I mean, it's not like he's on the run from anybody, but it like, I'm sure that there were parts of that father-daughter dynamic that were like, based in.
Yeah, well, like you said, this is based on a novel that didn't necessarily do that well. It was kind of bloated, but he's been sitting with it, and he just eventually, what he said is, he stole parts that spoke to him and then just started running like a thief. And then he worked on this film and pulled it together, and it has like the bare bones of the story, it sounds like, but even the Leonardo DiCaprio character is a little different. Obviously the daughter character is different, and then of course he modernizes it, where instead of being in this Reagan era of fascism, we are in the present day era of fascism. And yay, America, just the gift that keeps on giving. No, pretty crazy that, I mean, this could ring true across all phases of American history, which I think he also mentions in various interviews about that being such a motivating point, is like, yeah, different year, same shit. Like, this is America. And I think how it has worked out timing wise for it to come out not only this year, but like this month, this week, that also, I think, elevated the theatrical experience for me. Obviously, this starts in sort of a nebulous era of our modern history. I don't know if it's like, because it starts in this ICE detention center, or this sort of border police, I don't know, state where people are being, you know, kept in cages, children are being separated. Like, it's all, it feels very present in the headlines that we've lived through for the last 8 years. But this could also be, someone did the math, and if the end of the film is meant to be today, then that would put this story at the beginning of Barack Obama's administration, which I think also works, because we want to, like, I don't know, whitewash our own history and having these like beautiful moments of progressivism. But even during someone like Obama's administration, we still had these sort of aggressive detention centers and these aggressive immigration rules. And so, yeah, I think that that's something that stood out to me at the very immediate beginning of this film, is like, holy shit, we really are just the worst. Like, just to put it simply, it was like very upsetting and sad and tragic that this is the heartbeat of the film, is sort of these people who want to call out abusive politics and fascism, and you know, they're like quoting great revolutionaries and trying to do revolution the right way, but also it, you know, nothing really changes, nothing really works, and that's exhausting and that's soul crushing in its own way. But then on top of that sort of, I don't know, endless thrum of depression, there's this helpless sort of need for hope and keeping on keeping on, and like, how do you pass on the revolutionary spirit, and like, what does that look like for each generation? And so, like, I think it was interesting watching these multiple stories weave together, where you have the idea of revolution, you have the messiness and the reality of that sort of liberation front and their weird, you know, theater of watching them have their code words and their revolutionary handbooks and their, you know, systems that sometimes work and sometimes fail. But then you also have this sort of like endearing, bumbling father-daughter survival story. And then you also have the story of America and our treatment of immigrants and illegals and all of that. And so I think it was like, that was really mesmerizing to watch, not only because of, you know, my own political beliefs, but also just the headlines of today and like seeing how the military and the police can be weaponized in these really aggressively violent ways, and for what, you know, like our own selfish racist needs and wants. And then, and then, yeah, to have it all around the like silliness and the disgustingness of this depraved like secret society of racists, that's, that also rang too true, but also allowed for some needed laughs and reminders of how pathetic it is to care that much about people just trying to live their lives.
Yeah, I think he did a like sort of a smart thing. But I almost feel like this is set in like an alternate universe, or like, because some of the things are kind of goofy, like with the
Hail what, Saint
the,
Nick.
The, yeah, like the Christmas adventurers, which is like the sort of like KKK secret society thing that's got going on. And then like Bacton Cross, where the battle isn't a real place. There's not really like references to like real life politicians mm-hmm. and things. And so like, obviously there's a lot of like symbolism or connection and you recognize like, oh, okay, this is talking a lot about immigration. It's talking about like, it's talking about things that are very real, but sort of doing it in a way that it's not like, oh, this movie has somebody playing Trump on the TV, right. or this it's movie like has, you know, like, yeah. yeah, there's just like enough removed from that, that I think that you could sort of like accidentally end up watching it and rooting for these people in a way that you couldn't if it was more like one-to-one with real life events.
I could really still root for
I mean, no.
Steve Lockjaw was what Pete Hegseth said.
Well, I mean, no, I know you could. I mean, yeah, I could too.
I just want that on the record.
But I'm like, I feel like I think my dad could like go watch this movie and appreciate it in a way that like, I think his defenses would be down slightly, where I feel like the moment that like, you know, you get like, Donald Trump or whatever on there, that then that pops up a bit more.
Yeah, probably pretty dumb, but right? I mean,
I loved this, and I think that this has a, you know, sort of comparing it to The Long Walk last week. I mean, the ending is definitely like happier in this movie than it is in that one, to a certain degree. But I think it just really brings home the message of like the important, like how you combat these evil forces in the world is through connection to other people. It's in your relationships with your friends, in your family, and it's in like standing up for what you believe and being a revolutionary, but having that revolutionary attitude like based in your connections with people. Like when the French 75 is like meeting at the beginning, you can tell that all of these people like care about their mission, but also care about each other. And even as they're going through, you know, the back half of the movie, it's about his relationship with his daughter and like him and Benicio del Toro being buddies, and Benicio's like relationship with all of these people in his community who are all helping one another because they all have this connection. And what do you mean? You disagree?
Well, I think what was interesting is that, I mean, yeah, the French 75 are this crew, but then they're betrayed by their own. You know, there's a rat in their midst. And then that continuously happens. Like, yes, there's things put in place to sort of try to protect people as the inevitable, like, betrayals happen. But, like, I think more than, oh, it's your community and it's your friends and your family you're fighting for, I think they do need a bigger purpose because those friends and families are often unreliable, or they aren't as like forever as you'd want to believe in an ideal situation. And like, so Benicio's character, like, yeah, he has his friends and family and he's a part of the community, but more than that, his community seems driven by this like protective element of the entire people. Like, you know, it's not personalized. He doesn't know everyone in that hallway, but everyone has value to him because of the belief he has in, you know, his look at how to stand up to this fascist state and like what he can do to contribute to that larger, you know, issue. And like, I mean, I think it's telling that every time they get close, or it's like the two steps forward, three steps back of revolution, where people inevitably like choose themselves or protect themselves, and whether that's what's her name at the beginning turning on all of them, literally killing some, leading to the direct murder of some of her friends, or it's the daughter's friend giving the police her cell number. Like, I don't know, I think it is less to do with, oh, I care because I know you, I'll fight better for you. And more that, like, at some point it has to be in your, I don't know, moral fortitude that this is bigger than just you and me.
No, I mean, I don't think that I'm saying that like these people are doing things because they care about one person. Mm. It's not the like, it's not the Tenant philosophy of like,
yeah.
Well, if like this happens to everybody, it happens to my son and that's why I have to protect them. But just that in that, just like the sense of community and like, of seeing people as people and caring about them as people is what is important and like drives these revolutions and is why like I think that having community and not being isolated is so important.
Right.
And I feel like you see that in the difference between the Sean Penn character who like really has like no sort of like doesn't see other people as humans, doesn't really have that connection. It's sort of like this lone wolf where it's like even the people on his own group like don't really see him as a human being. They just see him as like another person who's slotting into something, versus like Regina Hall's character, which feels like it has such humanity and how she's caring about everybody. And that's not to say that like, oh, if you care about people, you're going to be perfect and you're not going to make selfish choices and such. But I think like that is what makes the two sides sort of different, is like that these people do care about people and that is sort of what is informing their decision, whether those people are people that they know or people that they don't know. And that community aspect is sort of like part of the fighting back. It's not like a solitary effort. It's all of these people sort of like pitching in as best they can to try to help each other.
And I think that also stood out to me is the beginning. You have this like extended I don't know, it's not even a single set. You have this extended like runtime of this earlier part of the story, the original French 75 and their various escapades and battles and whatnot. And you get like 20 minutes of that before the title card even drops, and then it flashes forward 16 years. But I think it was like it was interesting to watch like how the tone kind of shifted between these settings and these characters, and I would like be laughing along, enjoying something, and then just be like faced with the like attack on the what's it called? The city. What's the term for
when you have this,
like,
city?
Yeah, sanctuary city. And just like, oh, it was so sad to watch. And yet you're also like highly entertained and you know, engage in this sort of bumbling daddy-daughter survival, like him, Leonardo DiCaprio, having to shake off his decades of drug use to remember the code language of this group he'd forgotten about and kind of neglected, was entertaining. And like watching him run across the roof and eventually fall was entertaining. And Benicio like being so chill and trying to like understand what this guy needed, but also handling his own shit, was entertaining. But then also you're like watching this military police presence be weaponized against like citizens or families or people who just want, peace, sanctuary. You know, it's like, it was so affecting to like see these families living in a hallway and all they want is just like safety and a place to live, and they're being treated like criminals, and yet those people treating them like criminals are the ones who are breaking laws or bending the rules to get what they want and manipulate the scenes and, you know, torture and destroy, all for the sake of these individuals who have their own like secret agendas to wield power to disrupt, you know, the lives of people they deem as unnecessary and unimportant. And I don't know, like having that mirrored so exactly with like the ICE raids happening now and the, you know, Trump sending in the troops to these cities that he deems too liberal. Like it was shocking how on one hand it was just an entertaining movie, but on the other hand I was like really emotional about like, man, this is so dumb that we're doing this and that we're allowing this. And like the US is a fascist state. Like that's crazy that this isn't like fictionalized at this point. Like this is really happening. And I think there was like real power in how he managed that, because Yeah, to your point, I think a lot of directors would want to kind of have this like, oh, I'm gonna say something about this time. I'm gonna speak truth to this. But like, I wouldn't trust them as much as someone who seemed to have like a really deep understanding of like, no, this shit is bad, but this shit has been bad and this shit will continue to be bad. And we can't like just give up. Like, if everyone in this situation, especially the people of color, especially the Regina Hall character and the Benicio character, if they're still showing up for their people and like if they're still fighting the good fight, even though it's like not necessarily, you're not seeing any fruits of that, like you're not seeing any progress from that. Like, I don't know. I thought it was really like powerful to have this over the top kind of literal chase sequence, like between the St. Nick crazies and Sean Penn doing his little stunted walk and all of that, but then also managing to like say something interesting about the military state of today. Like, I don't know. I was like really struck by how it worked together without it feeling like one was window dressing for the other, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he weaves it all together so well, and it's like, there's enough funny parts to not make it seem self-serious, but there's enough serious parts to not make it seem like, oh, he's making light of like a tragedy that's going on. Like, it feels so current with the ICE raids and all of that, like in a sort of shocking way, like, because knowing how long it takes to make a movie.
I know.
Like, I mean, like, yeah, have these things been going on for a while? Like, yes, it's not like these are new, but at the same time, they've ramped up in a way that makes it feel like this movie could have been made like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, literally. Rob was like, wait, how did he like know this was gonna be happening? It's like, well, it has been happening, but now it's just like been more, unfortunately, like just like they're proud about it in a way that other politicians haven't been. But yeah, no, I think it all worked well and also made for like a really interesting piece, because a lot of the first bit, obviously you have the characters you care about and who end up playing a role later on, but it is like pretty zoomed out. It's like you're seeing these big swings taken by this big group, and then as the movie continues on, it really narrows into its scope until you're literally just three people on a you know, hillish road, like just trying to find each other. And so like that narrowing in of the scope was pretty interesting, and I felt really, I think it lent itself to this like father-daughter theme, where by the end the final closure is the daughter continuing her revolutionary, you know, heritage. Like, she's going off to Dewey to help in an Oakland march or whatever it was. And I think that was interesting, is like watching how that is passed on and like what that looks like for kids today, and like what is the right reaction, what is the most successful way forward, who knows. But I think watching it go from like bigger to smaller was, I also think, a really powerful statement about like, well, yeah, you just have to show up. Like, yeah, it's annoying, you're driving three hours out of your way, what are you going to do when you get there, who knows, but like you just have to show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, this movie's so good.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of, obviously not in finances or scope, but it reminded me a lot of how it felt watching How to Blow Up a Pipeline.
Which, love.
Yeah, love. And so that was nice to like feel, I mean, one, yeah, to have a movie that's like this is like $120 million movie, and like to have a company that would back that, obviously knowing, like with the asterisk attached to having Paul Thomas Anderson, Leonardo DiCaprio all lined up. But like, it's nice to see people put some money behind movies that seem willing to take risks, especially in a world where we just had to fight tooth and nail to get Jimmy freaking Kimmel back on air. Like, it's like, yeah, it's interesting to watch what movies get made and what stories get told and how it's positioned, because this is a very political film. Like, you cannot argue against it. You cannot pretend it is not making a satirical statement about these fascist racists in charge and like all of that. Like, you can't. And it's also crazy, like, this lined up exactly with the death of one of the Black Panther women who was charged with murdering a cop here and then fled to Cuba or whatever. I forget her name, and I'm so sorry for that. But it's like, this is such a relevant point of discussion, and it's crazy how the stars all aligned to make this a film that I think will be obviously very successful, period, but I think also lends itself to a very specific conversation. And that is just that's movie magic, you know, having it line up that way, I think is obviously sad that we're there, but still like a very interesting thing to have come out and have people engaging with and have people talking about now. Like, do I think Trump will ever watch this movie? No, I don't think he'd like it. And I love that, honestly.
But I do think that this is a good example. I think this and Sinners both are examples of like why like the awards cycle can be so important, just because like now you have these two movies that are both, that both have super timely political statements, and you're going to have these people talking about them until the end of March. Like, people are going to be watching them, more and more people are going to be watching them because they're going to get nominated for things. They're going to win stuff. Like, these actors are going to be on stage. They're going to be talking about things. Like, hopefully that is able to like push the conversation forward. Like, obviously we were going to go see this. Well, maybe not you. Obviously I was always going to go see this movie. And you know, you watch lots of movies. Yeah. So you take in a lot of these kinds of, you know, more interesting, like, you know, you watch How to Blow a Pipeline. A lot of people are not watching that movie. They've never heard of that movie, but they might go see this now. And I think that, you know, like, that's the importance of art, is that it can change the way that you think about things, but it can only do that if you actually like watch or read or listen
engage,
to whatever the art is. And so, yeah, when something comes along like this that is really timely but also really entertaining and really engaging, it's like a lot of people are going to go see this movie, I think, and hopefully it has, you know, the potential to be like, wait a second,
right,
this is what ICE is doing,
right?
I really wasn't paying attention, but like, now I'm like, wait, I don't like this.
It's like, I mean, to circle back to the title, it does feel like it's one battle after another. Like, there's always bad news, there's always like something shocking, horrifying, like truly soul-crushing happening. And a lot of us are just waking up to it. And it is kind of like frustrating that it's like, well, this is what it's going to take. This, we've been warning you about this for a while. But it's like, but also, you know, all we can do is study that revolutionary handbook once we remember it. We've got to learn the language. We got to be there. We got to like show up as we can. And I think that's what was charming about this movie. Like, I feel like it was accessible in a way I don't usually associate Paul Thomas Anderson with, in that obviously there's a lot of interesting choices being made, but at the heart of it is sort of this like very relatable character. I don't know, I haven't like been a mercenary like blowing things up for the heck of it, I don't know, but I have been a parent who's like stressed about how to raise a kid in this world and like, what do I need to like do to protect her, but also empower her and all of this. And like the bumbling element of this father-daughter duo was very charming and very sweet. And the stakes were high and it was terrible. But like, I'll be thinking about, it's an interesting movie because it was just like well-crafted, well-done. It's a great action piece. The set design of that last chase scene alone was just gorgeous. And like, I was like, wow, this is what they mean when they say this is cinema, you know?
Yeah.
But then I'm also like struck by thinking about those families in the hallway as Benicio is just like walking through unbothered, like just so familiar with this song and dance, unpanicked, as he tries to like herd these people into a safer situation. And I think that like duality of like, yes, this is showy, this is beautiful, this is interesting. Yes, it's satire. There's people saying Hail Saint Nick with all seriousness. It's insane. And yet it rings true. It rings really true. And I think that like humor and heart at play with the horror is really something that makes like this film feel worthy of all the praise.
As someone who has a bad memory, I related to Leonardo DiCaprio not remembering the phrase. I was like, I not a chance in hell I'd be remembering
it. What the fuck do you mean? What time is it? How many words do I need to memorize to prove to you that I'm this person?
I connected to Benicio del Toro telling the cop just a few small beers.
Yeah,
just
yeah. Small
beers. Like, I don't know what that means, but I love it. Also, I do feel like this movie was like supernaturally gifted to the two of us as a pair, given the fact that we were at a bar. What was this last year?
It was a gay bar, like hole in the wall. One of my first times out, like at a bar to order things.
Yes, and Shelby had no idea what drinks.
I was like, yeah, Matt, tell me what to order.
And I'm trying to think of like drinks that are kind of like not that are like that aren't like a vodka soda or something.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of something that has like a little bit more like taste to it. And I was like, oh, what about a French 75? Like that's like a well-known cocktail.
It's so embarrassing.
It's what, like gin and champagne? I think there's something else. Yeah. But anyways, I was like, this is easy enough. Like, I'll just tell Shelby to order a French 75. So she tells the bartender, I'll have a French 75. The man looked at her like she had a third arm growing out of her head. He's like, we obviously don't have a French 75 here. Like, are you psychotic? Why did you order this?
We don't have champagne.
And then, of course, I was like, wow, Shelby, that was so embarrassing. I'll have a vodka soda because I'm a low maintenance colleague.
So freaking rude.
Unlike Shelby. But French 75s are great drinks. And I'm going to say the official drink of this podcast.
You
had one eventually at a wedding.
It was good. It took me a lot to have the courage to ever ask for that again. I can be in a full bar, see champagne along the wall, and I'm still nervous to ask for a French 75.
Well, I bet you the French 75 is having an up.
Yeah. It's like the, so it's like the, what was
it's
it?
It's like the Negroni Sfagliati or whatever, with Prosecco in it. Yes. So I think you can.
Yeah.
I think you can safely order a French 75 now.
Okay, but we need to spend a minute. I know we have to wrap up, but Sean Penn. The choices made here, crazy. Like, literal personification of stick up your ass. Like, I was like, how is this man walking like this? I want to know more about his process of getting into the physicality of this role.
Well, to the extent where his walk is so weird that I looked up afterwards, I was like, was he in like a motorcycle accident or like something like in real life?
Can I make fun of this or is this like him now?
And I'm like, wow, he walked weird. And it's like, well, that's because he like was hit by a bus or something. Yeah. No, I don't think so. Also, his haircut was insane.
Crazy.
Like a wild haircut. At one point, he like licks a comb before he runs through his hair, which I was like, is that something that people are
doing? Was so unsettling.
So gross. And yeah, he like, unfortunately, like,
he made sense in the role. Yeah.
Like, no, it was perfect casting because he's kind of a creepy person in general. Like, he fit the role. He executed it well. I think he did a really good job. I'm kind of like, I think it's annoying to me that he is going to be in the awards.
Yes, I know. We keep awarding the races.
It's like, I think him and, like, Leo obviously is going to get nominated for a bunch of stuff. But I'm like, Sean, of the supporting cast, it's like Sean Penn sort of has, like, the biggest role that goes across both things. Like, Tiana Taylor, I think, is great and probably will get nominated for stuff, but she's only in the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, Regina Hall's part is, like, a little bit too small, I think, almost. Like, she needed, like, one kind of monologue somewhere in there that she didn't quite get. But I'm like,
he got the meat of it, like the most memorable bit. Like,
him going through his character going through the double humiliation of one, getting shot in the head by his own colleague, and then two, getting gassed in an ugly office building in Arizona. Really was like, wow.
I know, it's just loser behavior, and that's honestly. I think it's true. We need to call out these losers for being, like, so losers. Like, calling it Department of War, like, that's loser behavior. Like, please. calling in all your generals across the world to come into a in-person meeting that you then stream online is loser behavior. So yeah, I think that also was something I appreciated, was how laughably lame these racist losers gathering in their little secret not at all like stylized buildings. It's just like, well, you guys are losers.
He was basically going through all of the second half of the movie solely so that he could join the Christmas Adventurers. The elite. Christmas right, with these other like lame loser people.
And, yeah. But scary that they have so much power. But also, yeah, like we have to take our laughs when we get them, because these people are losers. Like caring this much about whether or not your would-be mercenary had sex with a black woman is crazy to like...
Well, so much of like cops and like military people, and I think politicians too, are like people who were like lame in high school, but rather than go to therapy and have your therapist or like, or good parents basically tell you like, look, it's a, like, not everybody is popular. Like valuable and important. Even if you are like a dorky band kid, like whatever, like make friends, have connections, like you can live a full life. Yeah. You don't need to be on the cheerleading squad.
Yeah.
But instead, it's just these people who get like enmeshed in bitterness and then they spend the whole rest of their life trying to force themselves into these positions of power so that they can like force people into thinking they're cool. And it's like, I'm sorry, Elon Musk is one of the richest people on the planet. Like, there is not enough money to make you cool.
Zuckerberg,
It's like, if you're trying to make everybody like you because of money, like, it's, you're going to have the opposite impact. You have to find self-worth in your own self separate of that. Yeah. And if you can't do that, you're going to be lame forever, which is unfortunately what all of these people are doing.
Ugh, I know it. Yeah. So, good movie. Ring true to life, even in its most... over the top, like satirical ways. And the far right white supremacist, just like ickiness, I think was really captured by every generically bad looking white dude has a role in this, some pop up somewhere.
Have the Republicans caught on to this movie yet?
I don't know. I mean, probably not. They're distracted with their fucking nonsense right now. I mean, good Lord, they're still on their Charlie Kirk train. I just can't. So I haven't seen anything be like, oh my God, this is promoting violence. You guys are monsters. But
monsters.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Okay.
this was great. I'm glad that we watched a PTA movie that we both agreed was excellent.
Miracles,
fun times.
Miracles always happen.
And like, I have to savor this because I can only imagine what's coming down the pike this year as far as movies Shelby will hate. Although, if it's this versus Sinners, that's an award season. That's like I feel like, like you're going to be hyped about that.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to like Hamnet all that much, but I also didn't really like Hamnet all that much.
Oh, interesting. Because that's been my to-read list.
Although, I don't know, maybe you'll like, I don't know. I feel like I can't really get into the mind of like...
like women.
Well, not women, but like parents. Parents losing their child. Yeah, so I'm like,
sad.
That doesn't quite have the same resonance.
Yeah, it can't quite get in there.
I can understand it, but I don't think it quite like hits me in the same way. Whereas like in Toronto, I saw this movie called Nino. It was about this... like 30-year-old man in Paris who gets a cancer diagnosis, and it's like him sort of like trying to figure out what he's gonna do like over the weekend before he starts treatment. And I was like going through it and afterwards I was like, I actually can't speak to anybody.
You had to flee
and like have 45 minutes to decompress by myself, and I'm like, oh, okay, so yeah, different things are hitting people in different ways.
You're like, I get it now.
Right. It's like, I don't give two shits about like, oh, some movie about where a dog died. But I'm like, now cancer stories are hitting me differently, let me say.
Understandable, yeah.
But Okay. Well, I'm like, I don't remember what is happening next week, but I'm sure that
it's Taylor Swift, the movie you've been waiting for.
Oh yes, Taylor Swift. Yeah. Yes, Taylor Swift, the lyric film. Oh gosh, yeah. And then her new album.
Yeah.
Which I saw a tweet that was like, oh, she has a song that George Michael is credited as a songwriter on it. And some Swiftie was like, most likely they'll be sampling George Michael's song, Father Figure. And the comments were like, well, he's dead, so he didn't help write the song. Like, they're either using Father Figure or he's not in it. Like, he didn't help write this, I don't think.
Yeah.
I love the 14-year-old Swifties
figuring things out. I think it might be a sample.
It's like,
AI George Michaels. They had a conversation and he added his own verse.
It's Tilly Norwood as George Michael. Okay. Well, I gotta go as well, but this has been lovely, and we'll see you guys all next week. Bye.